the two women stood together, watching the event continue to unfold. Here and there they heard the sound of laughter. They smiled at each other.
"This is a good thing," Elsie said. "A very good thing."
"His Majesty hopes that if all goes well today, your war chief might be agreeable to another such meeting at a later time." Elsie's smile faded slightly.
"I do not believe that will happen," the Prime Governor said. "But then again, I never believed it would happen at all. So it shows you what I know, I suppose," she chuckled.
"If there is a second gathering," the priestess continued, "King Anduin wants to meet you."
"Oh my, wouldn't that be lovely?"
Elsie glanced back toward the keep. It was far enough away that she couldn't distinguish faces, but it would appear that the young king was not shy about letting himself be seen. He stood wearing his distinctive armor, draped with a blue tabard bearing the golden lion of Stormwind. The bright shafts of sunlight seemed to seek him out, to catch the gleam of his armor and his golden hair.
"Queen Tiffin was such a beauty, and so kind," Elsie mused. "Anduin has her hair. A boy of sunshine, Will called him. No one knew then, back when I still breathed, that the boy of sunshine would one day be a king of the light."
As they watched, another stepped up beside the king of Stormwind, tall, powerfully built, with white hair.
"Who's that gentleman?" Elsie asked.
For a moment, a deeper shadow passed over the priestess's face. "That's King Gengraimane of Gilneas," she said.
"Oh, dear," Elsie said. "I imagine he's not too happy about all this."
"He may not be," the priestess replied. "But he's standing beside his king and he's watching us." She lifted her arm. "You might not be able to meet King Anduin, but you can wave to him," she told Elsie. Hesitantly, Elsie imitated her. At first, her movements were small and shy, but when Anduin saw them and returned the gesture, pleasure rushed through her and she waved more vigorously. Unsurprisingly, Greymane did not join in, but that was all right. He was there. Perhaps he would see something today that would move him.
"Imagine me, Elsie Benton, waving hello to a king," she murmured.
And when Anduin bowed to her, the Prime Governor of the Desolate Council laughed brightly in surprise. Arathi Highlands, Thoradin's Wall. Sylvanas made a point of speaking with each of the council members who had returned, angry and disillusioned, to the wall. She was both sorrowful and satisfied as she spoke to them.
"I feared this very thing would happen," she told them. "You understand now, do you not?"
They did. The gulf between human and forsaken could not be bridged. Sylvanas felt particularly vindicated when Annie Lansing, who had labored to create sachets and scarves to make the forsaken more appealing to the humans, trudged slowly back.
"You went to so much effort to please them," Sylvanas said.
"I thought if they weren't distracted by what we looked like, what we smelled like, they could truly see us," Annie replied sadly. "Truly see me."
"Who was it?"
There was a pause.
"My mother."
"A mother's love is supposed to be unconditional," Sylvanas said.
"Apparently, it isn't,"
Annie said bitterly. She unwound the scarf and Sylvanas gazed unflinchingly into her maimed face.
"We should have listened to you, Dark Lady. We were terribly wrong."
The words were sweet as honey, sweet as victory. The council would be divided, and the conflict among its members would destroy it, and Sylvanas hadn't had to do a thing. Sylvanas ascended the wall with quick, lithe steps and pulled out her spyglass. With any luck, she would see more newly enlightened Forsaken returning back where they belonged. Where was the Prime Governor in the midst of all this? Was she shaken by the attrition? Sylvanas found her, and all of her satisfaction evaporated. Velsinda stood easily and comfortably next to the cloaked and hooded priestess Fowl had brought with him. The Prime Governor looked toward the keep, upward to someone atop it. And then she waved. Quickly, Sylvanas moved the spyglass, the images it revealed to her veering about madly until they lit upon the figure of Stormwind's king. Anduin, smiling, was waving back. As Sylvanas watched, fury boiling inside her, he put his hand on his heart and bowed. Bowed. To Velsinda Benton,
the prime governor of the desolate council. Sylvanas opened her mouth to order the retreat. But no, not yet. This was not enough to convict Vilsinda in the eyes of the council. Sylvanas needed to tread carefully. To Nathanos, she said, I want someone watching Vilsinda at all times. And, she added, I want that priestess watched, too. Arathi Highlands Field. She laughs like a little girl, almost like a living thing. Kalia's heart was full, so full. She tried to burn this moment into her mind so that she would remember it when she woke with achingly empty arms from the nightmares that still haunted her dreams. When she would hear ugly words uttered by both sides of Azeroth's seemingly endless war between Horde and Alliance. She would remember standing in this field while the grown boy of sunshine waved to the woman whose husband had tended him his whole life. She would remember this day and all its gifts as the day when everything began to change.
I did bring something for him to give to Will wherever they buried him.
Elsie patted her chest, touching a simple golden ring that hung from a chain around her neck.
I want to wear it until the last possible moment, and then I'll put it on the table. It's my wedding ring. I wore it till the day I died, and after too, until I just couldn't.
She indicated her bony fingers.
It becomes hard to keep rings on, or fingers for that matter. But I kept this. I'd be so grateful if you made sure it reaches the king.
The priestess stared at the ring and thought of her family, of her child, whom she imagined as having grown up to be like Filia, brave and loyal and kind, of her own husband, who had kept her secret and loved her for who she was, of all the people of Lordaeron who didn't deserve what had happened to them and who had struggled on bravely. Of every one of those on the field today, brave enough to look past outer ugliness to an inner beauty, or conversely, brave enough to overcome their fear of rejection and see loved ones again as such, not as the enemy. Of Filia, who wanted to hug her father. Of Emma and her sons reunited in a mother's twilight years. Of the untold numbers of people just like them on both sides yearning to be united. Of her brother, who was responsible for all the pain. All the loss. Amenethil had done this. Amenethil would have to fix it. Chapter 33. Arathi Highlands, Stromgard Keep. For several long moments, Anduin stood watching, a smile playing about his lips. He recalled his first experience with the Conclave, how it felt to be walking into a place of complete safety, to see races that might otherwise be slitting one another's throats laughing together, or discussing philosophies, or researching, or simply sitting side by side in quiet, joyful coexistence. And now similar scenes were unfolding beneath him, but ones of possibly even greater import to the future of Azeroth. He watched Kalia, who had hidden in a ditch for 2 days while enraged mindless creatures swarmed and searched above her, move about the crowd, speaking to small groups and blessing them. He'd watched her heal Emma, whose reunion with not one but all three of her sons had been almost more than she could handle. He'd watched Parqual and Filia respond joyfully and freely to each other, as if death had not separated them at all. Kalia was too far away for Anduin to make out her expression. But she lifted her arm and waved. Standing beside the priestess was a forsaken woman who appeared not to have an Alliance family member. Glancing at Kalia, she too lifted her arm and waved to the King of Stormwind. This had to be the Prime Governor, Elsie Benton. Anduin couldn't suppress a grin as he waved back and impulsively gave a quick bow.
That's not how you pat yourself on the back.
Anduin laughed and turned again, clapping the older man on the shoulder. I confess, I might want to do a little back-patting. But I think the congratulations belongs to them. Those down there. The courage it had to take for any of them to be willing to do this. It's almost unfathomable. He expected an irritated retort. Instead, Gen Greymane was silent, as if seriously considering Anduin's words. And that, Anduin thought, was a victory right there. Arathi Highlands Field,
Philia had believed that her father, as he was now, would not be too different from the man she'd loved so much. She was discovering as they spoke and ambled around the field together that she was both wrong and right. Parkwall's appearance, especially up close, had shocked her initially. For a brief moment, though she would never tell him, horror and disgust had closed her throat and urged her body to flee. But then he had smiled, and it was her papa's smile. Different, oh yes, changed beyond imagining. But he was still himself. Some things he had forgotten, and that pained her. But in many ways, he was still so much himself that she could scarcely believe it. At one point, they were chatting happily about history, a topic about which they were both passionate. Without thinking, Philia blurted out,
"Oh, Papa, you should write about Arthas and what happened that day."
Horrified, she put a hand to her mouth as her father turned very still.
"I'm so sorry," she said. "I shouldn't have..."
"No, it's all right," Parkwall replied quickly. "It's something that I've thought about. A first-hand account. Primary sources are the most important, you know."
Philia did know, and she smiled slightly.
"I never did, because everyone who would read it already has their own first-hand account. But now..."
The possibilities.
"Papa, you could write it, and we could share it with the Alliance. We only know rumors and whispers. You could let us all know what really happened."
He looked at her sadly.
"I don't think our Dark Lady will permit a second meeting, my dear."
Philia felt as though her heart had plunged to her toes.
Is this our only chance to see each other?"
"It may well be."
She shook her head.
"No. No, I won't accept that. I've only just found you again, Papa. I won't lose you a second time. There has to be a way."
Philia expected more sad denials, but instead her father was silent. His lambent gaze was not on her, but on the woman who had been pointed out as the leader of the Desolate Council. Elsie Benton stood now with the human priestess, who had been so kind to the Forsaken. As if feeling his gaze, the priestess turned her head and looked at Parkwall.
"I think we may have found that way," Parkwall murmured.
Gently he placed a hand on his daughter's back.
"Come. There are people I would like you to meet."
Kalia continued to keep her eyes on the field as she spoke with Elsie. It looked as though all those who remained were having positive conversations with their loved ones. She heard laughter and saw smiles. This is how it should be. The people of Lordaeron haven't been free to be who or what they wish to be. For this moment, they are. There was Osric, talking to his friend Tomas. Over there, two sisters were reunited. There was old Emma, who Kalia had healed, looking 10 years younger as she smiled at her children. And Parkwall and Philia were coming to join them. They spoke for a few moments. Kalia was too far away to hear what they said. Parkwall said something to his daughter, then headed alone toward Kalia. She felt a flicker of concern. He shouldn't be approaching her like this. No one was supposed to know that she and Parkwall knew each other.
Loudly he said, "Priestess, may this Forsaken have your blessing."
"Of course," she replied.
He bent his head, whispering to her,
"We need you now. It's time."
What?
"You'll see. Be ready."
Kalia steadied herself and called for the light's blessing. It came, bathing him in its warm gold-white glow. Parkwall grimaced. The holy light healed Forsaken, but it was not pleasant for them. With a nod of appreciation, he turned and rejoined the group. She watched them, alert now. For a while, they simply chatted. And then, too casually, Philia and Parkwall walked away from the Fellstones. After a moment, the Fellstone family too began to walk. Slowly and indirectly, so as not to attract too much attention, they were moving from the center of the field toward Stromgarde Keep. Saara's words rushed back to Kalia so swiftly that she staggered. "There are things you must do before that peace will be granted to you. Things that you must understand. That you must integrate into yourself. People who need your help. What one needs in order to heal will always come one's way. But sometimes it is hard to recognize it. Sometimes the most beautiful and important gifts come wrapped in pain and blood." Was this the moment she had been thinking of ever since she had found her way to the Netherlight Temple and Archbishop Fowl? So much had fallen into place so perfectly. The desolate council, Anduin's noble call for this gathering, and now, spontaneously, human and forsaken had taken a step so courageous that Kalia felt both inspired and ashamed. Yes, Parqua was right. It was time. She whirled toward Elsie, her hood falling off with her movement.
Elsie, there's something you must know, and I pray to the light that has sent me here this day that you will understand and support it.
She swallowed hard.
Support me.
Arathi Highlands, Thoradin's Wall. Something is wrong, Sylvanas murmured, but I cannot put my finger on precisely what.
The priestess had said something to Velsinda that had the Prime Governor agitated. No one else on the field seemed to notice. They were too busy taking strolls with their loved ones. And that was it.
They're defecting, Sylvanas snapped.
Nathanos was instantly alert, scanning the field with his spyglass.
Several of them are moving in the direction of Stromgard Keep, he confirmed. But that may not be intentional.
Let's find out, Sylvanas said.
She lifted the horn to her lips and blew three long, clear notes. Now to see who comes when called and who breaks and runs. At that moment, one of the priests returned, urging her bat to go as quickly as it could. She looked shocked and sickened.
My lady, she gasped. The priestess. I didn't recognize her until her hood fell off. I can scarce believe it.
Spit it out, Sylvanas snarled, her body taut as a bowstring.
My lady, it's Kalia Menethil.
Menethil. The name was laden, heavy with meaning and portent. It was the name of the monster who had made her, who had slaughtered and destroyed. It was the name of the king who had ruled Lordaeron. And it was the name of that king's daughter, his heir.
And to think she had thought the King of Stormwind an ingenious fool. He played politics better than she could have possibly imagined.
Anduin Rin had brought a usurper with him. And now that girl, that damned human child who ought to be long dead, was taking Sylvanas' own people to join the Alliance.
My lady, what are your orders?
Arathi Highlands Field.
In the center of the field, Elsie stared at the Queen of Lordaeron.
It's not possible, she said,
but she knew it was true. Kalia had taken care to keep her face hidden in the shadow of her hood. But now the hood was gone, and she had turned to look directly at Elsie, and Elsie could not look away.
You are my people, and I want to help you, Kalia pleaded. I only came to observe, to begin to get to know the Forsaken of Lordaeron.
Undercity, Elsie said. We live in the Undercity.
You didn't once. You won't have to live in the shadows anymore. Just, please, come walk with me. Parqual, the Fellstones, all the others, see them? They're defecting. Anduin will shelter and protect you all. I know he will.
But the Dark Lady.
As if in response, the horn sounded three sharp blasts. Elsie turned her gray-green face back toward the wall and the forsaken banner that had been unfurled.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty, Elsie said. I can't betray my queen. Not even for you.
She turned and shouted,
Retreat! Retreat!
Arathi Highlands, Stromgard Keep.
Anduin heard the sound of the horn. Baffled, he looked down, trying to ascertain what had caused it. As far as he could see, nothing had changed from a moment. He pressed his lips closed to prevent a groan from escaping. There was sudden, deep, dull pain inside him.
What's wrong, son?
Gen asked sharply.
It is the bell,
Velen said somberly, sadly. Turalyon looked confused, but Greymane's face went hard. He knew about the bell, about the warning it meant to his young king.
The retreat, Anduin managed, grimacing as the pain increased. It's dangerous.
A second pain struck Anduin, different but even more devastating to him. For this was not the bone-hurting ache of the Divine Bell's handiwork, but the knife-sharp pain of a dream shattering before his eyes. With a sick jolt, Anduin saw that the tiny figures who had stood at attention on Thoradin's wall were now mounted on bats and flying toward the field. Dark Rangers.
It's over, he whispered, and leaned on the parapet.
Get them to safety before it's too late,
On the field below, spread out like markers in the map room, were other tiny figures. Some of them were heading back toward Thoradin's wall. Some were returning to the keep. And some still stood in the field as if paralyzed. The pain wasn't abating, and Anduin clenched his jaw against it as he looked back at the wall. He forced his fisted hands to open and lifted the spyglass. His mind saw things with a strange, swift clarity, and he immediately picked out Archbishop Fowl and Kalia. The former was close to the wall, urging his charges to rush through the gates to safety. But Kalia stayed in the field, arguing with Elsie Benton. The priestess's hood was down.
"Kalia, what are you doing?"
Kalia turned away from the Prime Governor, ran forward a few paces, cupped her hands around her mouth and shouted,
"Forsaken! I am Kalia Menethil! Head for the keep!"
"What is that girl doing?"
shouted Gen. But Anduin was not listening. His gaze was riveted on the pair of women in the field, one human, one forsaken, and at that moment, Elsie Benton dropped like a stone with a black-fletched arrow protruding from her chest. Kalia turned back toward Elsie, but she was too late. A look of horror was on her face, but there was nothing she could do now for the murdered Prime Governor. Kalia shouted again,
"To the keep! Run!"
Anduin jerked back, his mind reeling. Now he saw that everyone, humans and Forsaken both, had broken into a run. Sylvanas had moved to the offensive just like that, right under their watchful eyes. And he, Anduin Rin, had put innocent, unarmed civilians directly in her path. The only way to correct his terrible mistake was to do everything he could to save them, even if it meant starting a war. But even with that thought, the pain did not ebb. Everyone was shouting at him, asking for orders, telling him one thing while someone else was screaming another. But Anduin couldn't hear any of them. He knew that he needed to listen to what this strange, contradictory gift of the Divine Bell had to say to him. He squeezed his eyes shut and pleaded silently,
"Light, what is happening? What can I do?"
The answer came. It was swift, blunt, and brutal. "Protect and mourn."
"No,"
he whispered, protesting even as he accepted the words. His eyes snapped open. Gen was raging at him.
"Got to get our soldiers out there and stand ready to defend our people by..."
It was Tyrallian, radiant with the light. Anduin couldn't speak, but he nodded to Tyrallian that he should proceed. Bats swooped and darted over the field, their riders showering it with black lines. Each one struck its target, and Anduin understood.
"Gen," he said, his voice a harsh rasp. "Gen, she's killing them! She's killing them all!"
Sylvanas Windrunner had kept her word. Her rangers were not attacking humans. They were attacking Forsaken, even those who were returning to the wall.
"This is wrong," he thought, "and I am wrong for standing here."
Then he made his decision, and the pain ebbed at once.
"Whatever happens,"
he called over his shoulder, racing toward the one remaining griffin left.
"Do not attack the rangers unless they attack us. Is that clear? I need your word."
"You have it,"
Tyrallian stated. Anduin wondered if the paladin had some inkling of what he was about to do, or if he was simply being a good soldier. Gen, however, could never be counted on simply to obey without protest.
"What are you planning?" he demanded. "These aren't your people. They're hers. She'll kill you, boy."
Anduin was about to find out. Chapter 34. Arathi Highlands Field. For a ghastly moment, the slaughter around Kalia Menethil overlapped and blended with the memory of those two terrifying days years ago when she had lain motionless in a ditch while crazed undead rampaged only a few feet away. She was frozen and could only watch in horror as the dark rangers of Sylvanas Windrunner loosed arrows upon the members of the Desolate Council. They had come with no hatred in their hearts for Sylvanas. These were only people who wanted to see friends and family they thought were forever beyond their reach. But their war chief, their own Dark Lady, she who had made them, and above all others should be safeguarding their well-being, had ordered her rangers to shoot into their midst. "They aren't even armed," Kalia's mind said stupidly, as if that were the most important thing in this horrifying betrayal. They had brought only rings and love letters and toys onto this field.
They wanted nothing other than kindness and connection.
I didn't mean for this to happen, she thought,
but that didn't matter. Nor did it matter that the initial idea to seek sanctuary with the Alliance had come from Parqual. They would have been her people had they lived, and they were her people in Undeath, too. And she would not scurry to safety like a coward while her people were being butchered by a jealous usurper queen for daring to race toward what they believed to be a sanctuary. She was Kalia Menethil, heir to the throne of Lordaeron, and she would fight and die to defend her people. She just had to get them safely to Stromgarde Keep and maintain a barrier of light between them and the arrows that continued to claim them.
"To the keep!" she shouted. "Run!"
And she hastened to do whatever she could to shield her people from the false queen's rage. Arathi Highlands, Thoradin's Wall.
"My queen, what are you doing?"
Sylvanas heard the shock in her normally calm champion's voice. She chose to overlook it. On the surface, what was unfolding below, the firing of arrows, the screams and pleas of the desolate council as they tasted their last deaths, could seem perplexing and disturbing. "The only thing I can do and still hang on to my kingdom as it is," she said. "They were defecting."
"Some were running back here to safety," he replied.
"They were," she agreed. "But how much of that was fear? How tempted were they until that point?"
She shook her head.
"No, Nathanos, I cannot take that risk. The only desolate council members I trust are the ones who returned to me early on, broken and bitter, truly desolate. All the others, I cannot allow that sentiment, that hope to grow. It is an infection ready to spread. I have to cut it out."
Slowly accepting her words, he nodded.
"You are letting the humans go."
"I have no wish to fight a war when I'm not ready to do so."
She gazed at the growing number of motionless, forsaken corpses on the field. So many had opted for death.
"I don't think the boy king arranged this. It was stupid. He is naive, but he is not stupid. He would not risk war for a handful of forsaken merchants and laborers."
Her initial suspicion had evaporated quickly. If he had intended this defection, he would have planned better for it.
"No." Sylvanas placed the blame on the Menethil girl, as reckless and deceitful as her loathed brother.
She had gulled both the King of Stormwind and the War Chief of the Horde, and she was about to die for it.
"I grow tired of the game," Sylvanas said. "I will kill the usurper myself, and then the Forsaken will return home where they belong, with me."
She gave her champion a cold smile.
"One of the Desolate Council's desires was not to be reborn again and again. So I have given them two gifts today. A reunion with their loved ones and their final deaths. And now," she said, grasping her bow and leaping lightly atop a waiting bat, "I am about to consign Kalia Menethil to the annals of history's dead royalty."
Arathi Highlands Field. Anduin prayed to the light as he never had before. These people, both human and forsaken, had done nothing but try to see past their old hatred, their fear. They had reached out in love and in trust. Trust in me. To do what was right and good and kind. Even as he urged the griffin on to his greatest speed, he realized with a sick, sinking horror that he would be too late. Up ahead, Osric Strang ran beside his friend Tomas. The young king reached for the light, but before he could release it upon the running Forsaken, an arrow sang past his ear and implanted itself in Tomas's bony chest. It went clear through, piercing the spine with inhuman precision.
"No."
Anduin glanced around wildly. There was Filia with her father, Parqual, running with her arm around him protectively, as if she were the parent, not he. But the arrows of the Dark Rangers were as merciless as those who fired them. They struck true, and Parqual tumbled in mid-stride. Filia fell to her knees, her arms going around the decaying body and her sobs ripping Anduin to shreds. He could reach none of them in time. Not even any of the Fellstone boys, who were running toward the keep as fast as their long legs could go. One of them cradled the frightened, elderly Emma in his arms, trying to shield her with his own body, not understanding that he and his undead brothers were the ones in danger, not their mother. Three arrows sang. Three arrows reached their targets,
Three bodies toppled to the ground, their mother hitting the earth hard and crying out their names. The other Forsaken on this lethal field were much too far away. Anduin knew he could not save them, but he could save Emma. He brought the griffin down and jumped off his back, gathering up the weeping woman and calling to the light. "She has lost them all now. Please give her hope as well as healing. Her boys would want her to live." Emma's eyelids fluttered. She opened them and gazed up at him. Her eyes were swollen with tears.
"All of them," she said.
"I know," Anduin said, "and you must live for all of them, since they cannot." He lifted her. She was so light, so frail, and eased her atop the griffin. "He'll take you back safely." She nodded, summoning her courage, and held on tightly as the beast gathered himself and ascended into a sky crowded with bats and griffins bearing dark rangers and priests. Despite the provocation, Anduin's priests had not attacked, for which Anduin was grateful. Sylvanas Windrunner had killed her own people, but she had ordered restraint when it came to humans. At least thus far. Anduin's gaze swept the field. There were a few more Stormwind residents running toward the keep, but they drew no fire from the Dark Rangers. But a warning began to sound in the back of his mind. If they were done with the slaughter of their own kind, and they did not want to attack the humans who had participated in the gathering, why were they here? And the answer slammed into his head. He frantically began to scan the field for the one person, living or undead, who could possibly pose a threat to Sylvanas Windrunner. Kalia Menethil. She was running as fast as she could. A warm, golden field enveloped her, the light shielding her from harm. For now. Anduin cast a spell on himself as he raced after her, trying to close the distance between them. A shadow passed overhead. Anduin looked up and his heart surged as a single bat flew over him, low and close, an intimidation and a taunt. He caught a glimpse of glowing red eyes, and then the bat was gone, moving forward more swiftly than he ever could run toward the light-shielded, uncrowned queen of Lordaeron. Sylvanas was running her down like a hawk would a rabbit. The shield would protect Kalia, but it would not last forever, and then there would be a few heartbeats during which she would be completely vulnerable. If he could just reach her in time, he could call down another shield for her. But his decision to send the elderly Emma back to safety on his griffin meant that he was relying on his own 2 feet. He called on the light for strength and speed and a shield of his own. He knew that he had made himself the perfect target. So be it. If Sylvanas wanted war, let her start one. But even as he closed the distance, he knew it would not be enough. The cry of denial scraped Anduin's throat raw as he uttered it. The world around him seemed to shatter like glass. All its bright shards of hope and idealism and joy were rendered jagged and sharp. The glowing aura of protection around the true queen of Lordaeron shimmered, then vanished. He watched, only a few yards too far away to save Kalia, as Sylvanas Windrunner drew back a black arrow, slowly, languidly, savoring the moment, and then let it fly. Violet tendrils of smoke twined around the weapon as it flew unerringly toward its target. Time seemed to slow as Kalia, her hood down and her blonde hair flying, was struck in the center of the back, directly through her heart. She arched and fell forward, hitting the ground hard, arms and legs akimbo, making her last movements clumsy and graceless. Anduin called on the light, but he was too far, too slow, and there was no response. Kalia Menethil, heir to the throne of Lordaeron, was dead. Now, past all ability to help, to heal, he reached her and dropped to his knees beside her. Once more, a shadow fell over his body as well as his heart, and he looked up, devastated and furious, to see Sylvanas Windrunner smirking down at him. Another arrow knocked to the bowstring. The air was filled with the sound of beating, membranous wings as she was joined by a host of her rangers. They too had arrows knocked, all aimed at him. A spurt of fear raced through him. Then absolute white-hot fury. The shield of light still glimmered around him, but it would not last. He had a choice. He could save himself and immediately run to the keep, protected by the light. Or he could gather Kalia's limp frame and, vulnerable to even a single ordinary arrow,
bear her from the field.
Tyrallian kept calling this a battlefield. I kept telling him he was wrong.
Silently, Anduin gathered Kalia's still warm body in his arms and rose. He looked up at the Dark Rangers, at their dark mistress, and gazed evenly into those glowing red orbs.
You don't want a war, he said calmly. Don't I?
She drew back on the string farther. Anduin could hear the bone bow creak.
If I kill you today, too, I'll have a matched set of dead royals. A queen and a king.
He shook his head. If you wanted war, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But I have a right to declare it. You promised not to kill any of my people.
He lifted Kalia's body, letting her still frame say all that needed to be said.
Ah, but she is not one of yours, is she?
Sylvanas' voice had a cold but angry edge to it, and the hair along Anduin's arms lifted.
She is, was, a citizen of Lordaeron. Its queen. You brought a usurper onto the field, Anduin Rin. I would be well within my rights to consider that a hostile action. Who violated the treaty first?
She came as a healer.
She leaves as a corpse. Did you think I would not discover what you had done?
I swear to you by the light, I acted in good faith. I gave no orders for your people to defect. You can believe that or not. But if you strike me down, my people and all of Stormwind's allies will retaliate. And they will do so holding nothing back.
Her eyes narrowed. Anduin knew she understood the lesson of this day's tragic events. She was not universally loved among her people. He was. She ruled with an iron fist. He ruled with compassion. Neither of them was ready for a war. Anduin said a silent prayer that Sylvanas would not start one. The silence stretched on.
I grieve for the fallen today, Anduin said. But they did not die by my hand. Kalia Menethil was indeed not my subject. As for what she thought she could accomplish, I truly do not know. Whatever it was, she paid the price for it. I'm going to take her body back to the Netherlight Temple and the conclave she so loved. If you want a war, you can start it now.
He turned, feeling a phantom tingle in his exposed back as he began to walk calmly, without rushing, toward Stromgarde Keep. The shield around him faded and disappeared. Nothing happened. Then he heard the bats utter their unnerving, high-pitched sounds and a rapid, loud flapping of leathery wings. And then they were gone. There would be no war between the Alliance and the Horde today. Chapter 35. Arathi Highlands, Stromgarde Keep. The next few days were a blur of regret, pain, and soul-searching for Anduin Rin. Yen predictably had been furious, but to Anduin's surprise, he had bitten his tongue when the young king walked through the gates of Stromgarde carrying the body of Kalia Menethil. Fal was heartbroken, receiving the corpse of his beloved friend humbly from Anduin's arms, as stunned as Anduin had been at Kalia's turn, and riddled with remorse for not anticipating it.
I would never have brought her today if I'd had the slightest idea, he said.
I know, Anduin said. Take her home, and I will do the same for my people. I'll come to the temple as soon as I can.
It tore at him to see the people who had once been so full of hope look so shocked and devastated as they boarded the ships that had borne them to the Arathi Highlands and its ghosts. Even those who had not parted well from their forsaken counterparts looked shaken. Anduin usually was able to find the right words at the right time, but now he found none. What could he tell them, really? How could he possibly comfort them? There was no easy, obvious road back from this, and so he retired to his cabin, deep in prayer for guidance. It came in the form of a knock on the door, and the appearance of an old friend.
I do not wish to disturb, Velen said.
Anduin smiled wearily. You never could, he said, and invited the Draenei inside. He offered some refreshment, but Velen declined gracefully.
I will not stay long, Velen said, but I felt I should come. You are king now. Not the youth I guided only a few short years ago back on the Exodar. But I will always be there if you ever wish what wisdom the Light sees fit for me to give you.
Velen doubtless thought the reminder of Anduin's time among the Draenei would be comforting. But all Anduin could think of was how much he longed for those days. For that peace. And before he knew what was happening, he had blurted out, I feel helpless, Velen. I promised my people a reunion with their loved ones. Instead, they watched them be slaughtered. I want to comfort them, but I have no words. I miss my time learning from you. I miss the Exodar. I miss Oros.
Velen smiled sadly. We all do, he said. But we cannot go back to happier times. We can only live in the present. And right now, that present is painful. But we do have a way to be with Anaru. We are priests, Anduin. But we cannot heal others until we are steady and calm within ourselves. Go to the Netherlight Temple now. Share your grief with Faul, and in so doing, help each other. Speak with Sa'ara. See what it has to say to you. There is time. Then you can greet your people on the docks, and light willing, know what to say to help their wounded hearts.
Anduin smiled. I'll never be as wise as you, old friend.
Velen chuckled and shook his head ruefully. My only wisdom is to understand that I am not.
The Netherlight Temple. When Anduin entered the temple, he saw at once that something was happening. It seemed as though everyone in the temple had clustered around the entrance to Sa'ara's chamber, which was marked by its constant radiance. Anduin, frowning, hastened toward the crowd, making his way through the priests who stood or knelt, silent, reverent. Up ahead, Anduin could see the radiant lilac form of Sa'ara, and despite his heartache and confusion, he felt the Naru's comforting brush upon his spirit. Kali Amenethil's body hovered in front of Sa'ara. She lay in the air as if she were sleeping, her hands folded on her breast. Her blonde hair gleamed almost brightly as the Naru itself, falling softly, her gold and white robes draping her slender frame. Faul knelt in front of the crystalline entity, his head bowed in prayer. High Priestess Ishana stepped beside Anduin and said quietly, Something is happening to Kalia. Her flesh has not begun to decompose. Faul has been with her since he brought her here. The Draenei turned, looking down at Anduin as she said, Sa'ara told him to wait for you, my young king. A shiver ran down Anduin's spine, and he swallowed. He took a deep breath and stepped toward the Archbishop. I'm here, Your Grace, he said quietly. What would you have me do? Faul turned his face up to Anduin's. I'm not quite sure, he said, but Sa'ara was insistent that you were to be part of this. And then Sa'ara, who had been silent, spoke in their minds. Kalia would come to me when the dreams of what was past were too painful to endure, Sa'ara said. I cautioned her to have patience. There were things she had to do before the dreams would cease, things she must understand, people who would need her help. And I assured her of this seemingly strange truth, that sometimes the most beautiful and important gifts come wrapped in pain and blood. The truth of those words hit Anduin's heart. Those were the gifts that no one ever wanted, that one would do anything not to have bestowed. But they were also indeed, as Sa'ara said, beautiful and important. There will be no more battles for her now. Kali Amenethil will be freed from the pains of the living, from the nightmares that once rent her heart. She understood that those on the field were her people, and she accepted that responsibility by giving her life to try to save them. Not human, as they were when she was young, but forsaken, as they were in that moment. Light and dark, forsaken priest and human priest. Together, you shall bring her back as the light and she herself would have her be. Anduin's mouth was dry and he trembled. He looked at Faul, but the priest only nodded. They moved wordlessly to Kalia's side, standing as she hovered in midair,
and each of them took one of her small, pale hands. "Bring her back as the light, and she herself would have her be," Sa'ara had said. He didn't know what the Naru had meant by the words, and he suspected Fowl didn't either. But somehow, he knew, Kalia did. Anduin felt the light come to him, warm and calming. It seeped through his body, soothing his spirit and his tumultuous mind. It was a familiar sensation, yet there was something different. He usually experienced the light's power flowing through him like a river. But now, it seemed like a whole ocean was utilizing him as a vessel. Anduin felt a quick flicker of fear. Would he be able to contain and direct something this powerful? He anticipated that he would feel overwhelmed, stretched to his limit. But the tide of light that swept through him now was one that reinvigorated him even as it asked him to be fully present, to give all of himself to the task ahead. "Yes," he said in his heart, "I will." The light limned him in its warm hue, and it chased around the still yet completely intact body of the Queen of Lordaeron and whirled about the Forsaken Archbishop. Anduin felt it swell like a wave, then crest and break, emptying him but not depleting him. The cold hand in his squeezed. Anduin gasped as Kalia opened her eyes. They glowed a soft, gentle white, not the eerie yellow hue of a Forsaken's. A smile curved a face that had no flush of life to it. Slowly her body tilted from horizontal to vertical, and her feet settled onto the stone floor. Kalia Menethil was dead, but she lived. She was no mindless undead, but she was not Forsaken either. She had been raised by a human and a Forsaken, both using the power of the light, bathed in the radiance of a Naru.
"Kalia," said Fowl, and his voice trembled. "Welcome back, dear girl. I didn't dare hope that you would return to us."
"Someone once told me that hope is what you have when all other things have failed you," Kalia said to him. Her voice was echoing, sepulchral, but like Fowl's, it was warm and kind. Her white gaze went to Anduin. She smiled gently. "Where there is hope, you make room for healing, for all things that are possible, and some that are not." Anduin watched as everyone responded to Kalia's, what, resurrection? No, she was still dead. Dark gift? That wouldn't be accurate either, because it was the light that had been present today. There was nothing of darkness in this undead woman. After a short time, though, she turned to Anduin and gave him a rueful smile.
"Thank you," she said, "for helping the Archbishop bring me back."
"The light didn't need my help," he said.
"Well then, for not abandoning me on the field."
"I couldn't do that." He frowned and asked quietly, "Was that your plan all along? To use my work on the gathering as a chance to reclaim your throne?" Sorrow flitted across her pale face.
"No, not really. Come, sit with me."
They found a small table and everyone gave them privacy.
"Ever since I met Archbishop Fowl, I had believed that one day, if I had the chance, I could show that even though I was not Forsaken, I could treat them as my people and rule them well. My brother had tried to destroy them. I wanted to help them."
"So when you heard about the gathering, you wanted to participate?" She nodded.
"Yes. I wanted to meet more Forsaken who are not priests. I wanted to see how they would react to meeting their families. But that was all I intended for the gathering. I swear it."
"I believe you," he said, and he saw her visibly relax.
"I don't deserve that. But thank you."
He folded his hands on the table and looked at her piercingly. "So, what changed your mind?"
"Parqual Fintalis approached me and said that they needed me now, that it was time. I didn't know what he meant at first, but then I realized they were defecting. I had a choice: support them, reveal who I was, and get them and others to safety, or disavow them and get them killed."
She looked away.
"But I got them killed anyway."
"You also almost started a war," Anduin said, his voice hard. "You could have been responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands. Do you understand that?"
She looked chagrined.
I do now, she said. I was never taught how to rule, Anduin, because no one expected me to. I never formally studied politics or strategy. So when I got out there...
You just followed your heart, Anduin said, his anger turning to sorrow. I understand that. But a ruler doesn't always have that luxury.
No. I am not yet ready to rule. But I wish to serve the people of Lordaeron. They are my people. And now I am like them. It feels... right.
She smiled.
I'll learn. And from the Archbishop, I'll learn what it's like to be... this. To be undead, yet walk in the light.
It should have been harrowing. It should have been ghoulish. But as Kalia Menethil, changed but still herself, gazed at the King of Stormwind, all Anduin could think of were the Nauru's words. Kalia was freed forever from the nightmares that had haunted her. And he was glad. It was the only comfort on one of the bleakest days he had ever known. Epilogue. The Arathi Highlands. Velen had advised Anduin to go to the Netherlight Temple, speak with Saara, and listen to what the Nauru said. Then, Velen had suggested that Anduin would be able to greet his people on the docks, and...
Light willing, know what to say to help their wounded hearts.
The Draenei had been right. When the ships had come into Stormwind Harbor, Anduin was there to meet them, but not to welcome them home. He was there to take them back to the Arathi Highlands. He brought with him the carvers of tombstones and the diggers of graves. The people of Lordaeron, of the Undercity, would not be left to rot, forgotten in a damp green field. Anduin had invited those who wished to return to stay on the ship. Others were welcome to go back to their homes. Most stayed. Now he walked among them, watched but undisturbed by the Forsaken who manned Galen's Fall near Thoradin's Wall, as they identified, spoke words over, and buried those who had been brave enough to try to move past prejudice and fear. Anduin listened as humans told their stories about the fallen as the Forsaken were, at last, laid to rest. Velen might deflect compliments about his wisdom, but Anduin knew better. This was healing. This was respect. When they buried Jem, Jack, and Jake, Anduin did not think he would ever forget their names. Emma broke down. Filia was there, slipping an arm around her to support the old woman, her own eyes red with weeping.
They're gone now. Every one of them, Emma said. I'm all alone.
No, you're not, Filia said. We'll help each other.
Gen had returned to the Arathi Highlands with Anduin. He still hadn't had a chance to talk to the boy, and he wasn't about to let him return without accompanying him. Now he listened as Filia and Emma comforted each other, and watched as Anduin, clearly deeply moved, strode a few paces away. Gen stepped up beside him. I knew cats were quiet, but you wolves are almost as stealthy, Anduin said. Gen shrugged.
We know how to move to suit the task, he said.
So I am discovering. Repeatedly.
I've gotten to know you rather well over the last few years, Gen said, ignoring the jab. I've watched you grow up. A harder task for you than it ought to have been. But nothing is easy in this world, it seems.
No, Anduin agreed. His blue eyes roamed the field. Not even keeping peace for a single day.
You should know by now that peace is one of the hardest things in this or any world to keep, my boy, Gen said, not unkindly.
Anduin shook his head in sorrow and disbelief.
I can't blot out the images of the Desolate Council, running as fast as they could to what they thought was a future with their loved ones. I feel responsible. For them. And for them, he said, gesturing to the living still moving on the field.
Sylvanas killed her own people, Anduin, Gen reminded him. Not you.
Rationally, of course, I know that. But it doesn't matter. Not in my bones. And not here.
Anduin placed a hand on his chest for a moment, then let it fall. Those who fell on this field did so because King Anduin Rin of Stormwind had promised that they would be safe as they reunited with their loved ones. And they died because of that promise. Because of me. The bitterness in his voice was like acid. Gen, who had never heard it from him before, fell silent. After a time, Anduin spoke. You've come to lecture me, obviously. Go ahead. I deserve every word. Gen sniffed and rubbed his beard for a moment, his eyes on the horizon.
Actually, I've come to apologize.
Anduin's head whipped around, and he didn't bother to hide his shock. Apologize? What for? All you did was warn me against this.
You told me to watch. So I did. I listened, too.
He pointed at an ear.
Wolves have excellent hearing. I watched the interactions. I saw tears. I heard laughter. I saw fear give way to joy.
He kept his gaze on the people of Stormwind honoring their dead as he continued to speak.
I saw other things, too. I saw a Stormwind guard head out onto the field. He spoke with a forsaken woman. His wife, or his sister, perhaps. But he finally shook his head and walked away from her, back to the keep.
Anduin's brow furrowed in puzzlement, but he remained quiet.
The Forsaken lowered her head and stood for a moment. Just stood there. And then, very slowly, she walked back to Thoradin's wall.
Now Gen faced Anduin.
There was no violence. No anger. Or hate. Not even hard words, it seemed. And while those happy reunions were remarkable, extraordinary, it struck me that this was even more important. Because if humans and Forsaken could meet, with so much emotion involved, and disagree, dislike, or even be repelled by one another, and simply walk away.
Greymane shook his head.
All I'd seen from the Forsaken was treachery, deceit, and a hunger to end life.
I watched my boy die in my arms, giving his life to save mine, he thought, but did not say.
I saw ghastly, shambling monstrosities descend upon living beings, with no desire other than to snuff out that light of life. I'd never seen what I saw that day. I never thought I could.
Anduin listened.
I believe in the light, Gen stated. I've seen it, benefited from it, so I have to. But I've never really felt it. I couldn't feel it from Thal. I just saw what I viewed as a gut-wrenching travesty. An old friend, dead, animated like some sort of joke, spouting things that couldn't possibly be true. And then, he said something that was true. Too true. It cut like a blade, and I couldn't bear that.
Gen took a deep breath.
But he was right. You were right. I still think what was done to the Forsaken against their will was horrifying. But it's clear to me now that some of them haven't been broken by it. Some of them are still the people they once were. So I was wrong. And I apologize.
Anduin nodded. A smile crossed his face fleetingly, then was gone. It was clear he was still burdened with guilt and stubbornly wouldn't relinquish the pain of it. Not yet. You were right about Sylvanas, Anduin said, that cold bitterness lingering in his voice. Light knows I wish I'd listened.
I wasn't right about her either, Gen said,
startling Anduin for the second time in as many minutes.
Not entirely. I knew she couldn't let this go by without doing something. I thought she'd attack us, not her own people.
Anduin winced and turned away. She may have killed them. But I promise the Desolate Council safe passage. Those deaths are on my conscience. They will haunt me.
No, they won't, Gen said. Because you kept your end of the bargain. No one realized how poorly Sylvanas Windrunner could deal with anything that wasn't complete and utter obeisance. If you ask me, the Desolate Council signed their own death warrant simply by existing as a governing body. She'd have done something to them sooner or later. Their ghosts, if Forsaken can have ghosts, won't haunt you, my boy. You did something wonderful for them.
Now Anduin did turn to Greymane, looking him full in the eye.
Answer me this. Would it have been enough for you, Gen, to see your son one more time and pay for that one encounter with your life?
The question was utterly unexpected, and for a moment Gen was taken aback. Old pain shot through him, and he tightened his jaw. He didn't want to answer, but there was something in the youth's face that would not let the older man refuse.
Yes, he said at last. Yes, it would have.
And it was true. Anduin took a deep, shuddering breath and nodded at Gen.
Nonetheless, it is a tragedy. And it's done any chance of peace great harm. It's destroyed the prospect of working together with the Horde to heal the world. Azerite will continue to threaten the balance of power. It's hurt the Alliance, too. Sylvanas used a moment that could have been a true turning point, as a chance to eliminate people whom she viewed as her enemies. And she did it so smoothly, so well that I can't even call her on it. She didn't break her word. Kalia was a would-be usurper. I can't ask Stormwind to go to war, because the war chief of the Horde chose to execute individuals she will now paint as traitors. So she gets away with it. She's won. She eliminated the opposition, killed the rightful heir to Lordaeron, and did it all while looking like a noble leader for not attacking the Alliance and starting a war.
Gen said nothing. He didn't need to. He simply stood next to Anduin and let the young king sort it out on his own. The minutes passed, and then finally, Anduin spoke.
I will never, ever stop hoping for peace, he said. His voice trembled with leashed emotion. I have seen too much good in too many people to paint them all as evil and worthy of slaughter. And I will also never stop believing that people can change. But I realize now that I've been like a farmer expecting to harvest crops from a poisoned field. It's simply not possible.
Greymane tensed. The boy was leading to something.
People can change, Anduin repeated. But some people will never, never desire to do so. Sylvanas Windrunner is one of those.
He took a deep breath. Sorrow and grim resolve made him look older. Gen had seen similar expressions on the faces of those who had been tasked with a heartbreaking duty. When the boy spoke, Gen was glad of the words, but saddened by his need to say them.
I believe, said Anduin Lane Rin, that Sylvanas Windrunner is well and truly lost.
This is Josh Keaton. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of World of Warcraft Before the Storm by Christy Golden. This program was directed by Scott Cresswell, executive producer Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2018 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. Production copyright 2018 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.